Hi, audience. Do you know what I hate? That's right. I hate the concept of illness. I'm woke as fuck. John's sick. He's a lunger. He's got, I don't know, typhoid, dysentery. He's got something that you could get in the video game Oregon Trail. So we're pushing back the Ready Player One episode. That'll be out next. I don't know what the schedule's going to be, but, you know, keep your eyes open. But for this episode, we're going back into the AlexCast archives. John was on my other podcast many times, and this is one of them. We watched the Steven Seagal movie, The Perfect Weapon. I hope it's called The Perfect Weapon. It might be called A Perfect Weapon. Either way, it's Steven Seagal, Perfect Weapon. Who gives a shit? It is a delight. This is the precursor to John and Alex Hate Stuff. We watched the movie. We discussed it. It was on my podcast instead of mine and John's. I think we discuss other stuff on there. The episode description says we discuss FX's Legion, so that probably happens. I'm sure it's delightful. I'm not going to listen to it. I'm just going to say this. So stay tuned for Ready Player One. This episode is Steven Seagal's A Perfect Weapon, The Perfect Weapon, Perfect Weapon. And that's about it. Follow us on Twitter at JawsPod. We're on Facebook, John and Alex Hate Stuff. And yeah, that's all you really need to know. Oh, and there's more audio on my Patreon, patreon.com/AlexBolin, Alex Bolin with two X's. And yeah, there's a bunch of John audio there. Anyway, enjoy the show. We'll be back as soon as is possible. Everybody, it's me, Dr. Oh, wait. Hey guys, it's me, Alex. That's it. Sorry. I get confused by things and stuff. I frankly am a little out of sorts right now, John.
Yeah, as well you should be after that thrill ride.
Yeah. That's John. He's in studio. Hi, John.
Hello.
So we as become well, not habit, but things that have happened is that John and I have watched something stupid, and we're going to talk about it. I think last time you were on was the Neil Breen classic, that one that the stuff happened in.
Fateful Findings.
That's the one. And so tonight we decided to sit down and watch what I would consider, it's up there with On Deadly Ground 2, with masterpieces of cinema. We watched The Ultimate Weapon?
The Perfect Weapon.
The Perfect Weapon. Oh, The Ultimate Weapon's Final Fantasy.
Yes.
I was close. Starring Steven Seagal.
But this was my Final Fantasy.
Yes, because you apparently are really bad at writing dialogue in your fantasies. So this starred Steven Seagal, the guy from Kindergarten Cop,
the villain, not Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, I mean, I think that's understood.
Or any of the children.
Yeah.
Although I can't 100% say that that's true.
Sure, they could be in there. And then a whole bunch of people that looked a lot like other people.
Yeah.
Starring our lead, who looked like a combination of Jean-Claude Van Damme and George St. Pierre, a famous MMA fighter. So we sat down and watched that, and I had no idea what to expect. I did no research going to this other than asking John if it was available on Netflix. Now, you've not seen the film before.
Tonight. I have not seen the film. I have heard some rumblings in certain Twitter circles about late era Seagal movies, which are all apparently fantastic in their own way. But this one in particular was alleged to be quite special. And spoiler alert. It absolutely is.
Yeah. So we watched, what's the name of it again? Perfect Weapon?
The Perfect Weapon.
Okay, Perfect Weapon. So there's going to be spoilers for this movie. So if you're one of those people that likes listening to, no, I've actually had, people write in, not people, one person, but they wrote in saying that they really enjoyed having watched the movie because they watched Fateful Findings first.
Oh, yeah.
And they were really happy that they watched
Fateful Findings, you can't, yeah, you gotta, Nothing that you can say about Fateful Findings makes any sense unless you've seen the movie. This movie is fairly boilerplate in a lot of ways.
Oh, totally. So yeah.
Still, absolutely go watch the movie.
Yeah. So fair warning to the person that wrote in. We are going to talk about it. If you want to go watch the movie, it's available on Netflix. It's not particularly long.
It is not.
There's going to be very few compliments to this film, I predict, over the course of us discussing it. But I will say this.
Get ready to be surprised.
To be honest, there's actually probably a few compliments I have. But one of the things here, a very swift movie. That did not lag.
No, that was something I was honestly surprised about. Because again, going with something like Fateful Findings, where the 90 minutes is this interminable event horizon that you never actually get to.
Epically long. Yeah.
Like this moved quite quickly.
Yeah, and it's weird because it's. How does one word it? It's edited like a poorly paced movie, but it's not poorly paced. Like, you know how poorly paced movies have like a lot of extraneous shots? Like, this movie has like, what, two or three different shower scenes that don't need to be there.
Right. But keep in mind, when we're saying like extraneous shower scenes, these aren't like, it's a guy being sad in a shower.
Yeah. For 7-8 seconds.
At a time, yeah.
Which is weird because literally that's the mark of bad editing is throwing in this thing that does nothing for the plot. It's just sitting there. But normally those are eat up, you know, a minute 30 or something.
Right.
So it's weird because it's got all the hallmarks of bad editing. It is badly edited, and yet it's actually well edited. Like, it actually is crisp in its cut.
Well, I think it's a matter of, like, it's in some cases it is like bad editing where it's like 8 different shots for a guy jumping over a car. But it is, I think, because there's absolutely nothing of substance there. You're spending a lot of time like trying to piece out what's happening, and I think that kills a lot of time. That makes things seem faster than they actually are.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think on rewatch, it probably would last a really fucking long time.
Yeah.
So I guess we should set up the film now. Let me.
Also waiting the knowing what's going to happen in the end. And expecting that is going to make it seem longer because you know how great the ending is.
That's true. We're not going to give away the ending right now, but you know, there's a twist at the end, and you know, I'm going to tell you, I think upon rewatch, I think I'm pretty sure, you know, given the quality of this film, it was probably peppered with hints that, you know, now you're watching a second time, you're like, oh man, I should have seen this coming.
Yeah. I would be shocked if that were true.
No, I'm sure. Cause I felt like I was in the capable hands of really good filmmaking.
So this movie was made by a guy, Titus Parr, who is all the way foreign. I don't know from where, but one of them European countries.
That's the people that make the things that you decorate eggs with. So whatever country that's from.
Fabergé.
That's Parr.
That's Paz.
I thought it was Parr. All right. Well,
no,
I don't know anything.
No, Parr is the lumber company.
Oh, okay. So he's from a place with trees.
With trees
so
and
that'll
eggs.
That'll narrow it down. And what was the guy's name? Do you remember?
Titus Parr with two A's.
So he directed this film. Now let's break this down. Now,
if you look up the director, like, he listens to Linkin Park still. If you look at the picture of him that's available online,
and if you listen to the soundtrack here,
yeah, that's also makes complete sense.
So wait, we got to get back to the soundtrack at some point, but let's do this. So I would like to, I'm going to take a stab at this. Then you take a stab at it. This movie was about a guy that looks like George St. Pierre. He's a trained killer that gets programmed to be a killer. Though later in the movie, that might not be true. He's sent on a mission to kill a revolutionary leader that's trying to overthrow Steven Seagal's dystopian government. The revolutionary leader is actually somewhat of a villain too.
Well, yeah.
This is where I get a little hazy. Wait. Let me try to finish this up. They try to get reprogrammed, but he sneaks out of it, and then the end is he's going to topple the evil regime. Is this just about what you got of it?
Sort of. Okay.
Okay, so, John, please tell me what you thought this movie was.
It's a dystopian future, apparently.
Oh, thank you for apparently. Yes. Underlined apparently.
There's this whole opening, like, Blade Runner-y shot of giant screens on buildings, giving you exposition about what's happening. And it tells you that whatever, I'm assuming it's America, the their leader, the director.
That's Steven Seagal.
That's his name. Yeah. No, he's just, the director. He's in charge, and apparently that's bad. And you know that because the state broadcast is interrupted by a pirate broadcast that's labeled a pirate broadcast from this opposition rebel leader you're talking about, who's also apparently a regular politician, because when he gets murdered, there's like a sad farewell for him on state-run television. There's never really indication about what's bad, what the state is doing that's bad.
Like, yeah.
You never see anyone like in abject poverty or like underneath anyone's jackboot or something. You just are, I guess it's bad. And this killer, now I would normally give you crap because you said a killer trained to be a killer that is programmed to be a killer. But I believe that's absolutely true in
yeah,
this case.
No, I think that is. I wasn't stumbling. Yeah. I was actually trying to parse out what was going on there.
So he is supposed to kill this guy. He goes to kill that guy, but he's distracted because that guy has got a prostitute that looks like the woman he loved that was murdered years before that may or may not be that end up being that woman. But he kills the guy, and they're all worried that he didn't kill the prostitute lady, I guess. Like, well, he's acting erratic. We need to reprogram him. And in the middle of reprogramming, he escapes and then... intrigue, I guess.
Okay, I think we're on pretty much the same page. As much as I feel confused, I feel like we're on the same page with this. Okay, he's been programmed to be the perfect weapon.
They say that several times.
Okay, so why does he remember that girl?
Because he was. I guess we want to get spoilery with it.
Yeah, let's get spoilery.
That was implanted into his brain, his controller. Because like, if you're this kind of assassin, I guess you have a person that if you're familiar at all with the Hitman video games, you have that every game you have the lady Diana or Diane, I forget what her name is, that tells you, hey, 47, you're gonna go kill this person. So it's basically that's the controller, and he put that in his brain. As part of his whole grand scheme to overthrow the government.
Okay, now I get where you're like, correct. But is this guy an idiot? Because he knows he's a programmed killer, and yet he has memories from before. Like, so he. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, I don't think he knew that because it's one of those things. Like, he knows that they've told him, like, we trained you how to kill. I don't think they ever told him, oh, we put these things in your brain.
See, I thought he was aware of that because later in the film, he was tortured and that torture was being transmitted to the other killers.
Right.
So I just assumed it was kind of above board. Like, everybody knew they were programmed kind of Manchurian candidate style.
Well, I don't think that. Well, I mean, they knew they were watching him being tortured. That was more of a cautionary tale.
No, what I meant was, I just assumed that it was. I thought that their conditioning was transparent. Like, they were aware of the fact that they were they were aware of what they were.
I guess you could argue that they were, yes, to some degree, but perhaps they were not aware of
how
deep that conditioning went.
So, okay,
there's a lot this movie does.
No,
you just sort of assume.
That's fine. You know, that's I'm probably, again, I think it's just because everything else was so confusing. Maybe I just overthinking that aspect of it. Okay, so he still doesn't make that part. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the thing that also doesn't make
let's spoil everything up until that last reveal.
Right.
He gets woken up out of reprogramming, which that reprogramming, again, doesn't really do anything.
Well, apparently. What it does is it hooks you up to electrodes, and then they show footage of computer printout, like, graphics over you.
Yeah.
And then that changes your mind.
Sometimes. Well, yeah, no, that's how you program someone. Now, I'm not arguing with that. I understand science. I don't get... Okay, so he's going back in the machine, and then big reveal. The guy from... the villain from Kindergarten Cop, I guess, pulled him out before he's fully reprogrammed.
Yeah, for some reason, he just wakes up, and then later it's just like they go, oh, well, you only woke up because a mole did that. And then we figure out that the mole is his controller.
But if this... Okay. What was that?
I don't know.
Was that, did that come from in here?
Yeah, I think it was your computer.
Weird. All right. I've never heard that noise before. Oh, apparently that's the noise that recent summary, no threats were found since your last summary.
Well, that's good news, everybody.
Yeah, I've never heard that noise before. Thank you.
I'm glad you could share that moment
with us.
Yeah,
I'm really glad that happened. So, okay, so his controller, kindergarten cop villain.
Yeah.
Why would he have to wake him up? He's his controller.
Yeah, no, because he, well, he woke him up, but he couldn't. Since he was rebelling against the state.
Yeah.
He couldn't let the state know he was involved in that. So he surreptitiously woke him up so that it looked like something crazy just happened.
Got it. But yeah. He's his, and maybe I'm overthinking the word controller.
Yeah, no, I think
you could just go, hey, you know how I control you? Go kill the director.
I don't know if it's that literal.
Am I? Maybe I'm overthinking. So anyway.
Yeah. Hold on, if you're not going, duh, you're overthinking this movie. That's fair absolutely. Yeah. Which I am absolutely about to do. It doesn't help in this movie that absolutely any piece of dialogue is given like this. Every single character, be they man or woman, kind of has this sort of talk. It's all just raspy voice, and I've been drinking for 8 hours.
Now, if I may correct you. The end of everything is truncated and like it just, the mic, there was a point in this and this very much speaks to how annoying I am as a person, but there's one in this where I had to ask John about lavalier versus boom mic recordings while they're recording. Cause boy, there's a lot of it that you can't get. And I know they're not enunciating very well, but it's also not recorded very well.
And it is just, I think it's also just a matter of, you know, since everyone's talking like this, and then there's like boot bassy audio music, you know,
playing, yeah,
that kind of gets drowned out.
Oh, so let's get.
That's supposed to be the perfect weapon.
The music in this was all right. So here's one of the few positive things. It looked very nice. Like
it
had some budget.
Yeah.
But it was very much the future as predicted in 1997. Except it was a movie made in 2017.
Yeah. I think that's even generous calling it 1997. I think you could go earlier than that. Like if you watch Cyber Tracker, that Riff Tracks Cyber Tracker, like it's that kind of thing, like with just sort of the colored gels over every light.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Blade Runner earlier, there is a weird sort of like kind of Asian influence. But I wonder how much of that was sort of written in the script and how much that was Steven Seagal being like, no, I gotta wear this kimono.
Yeah, totally. Was Cybertracker the one with the dinosaurs?
No, that's Future War.
Because Future War, the lead guy kind of looks like the lead guy from this movie.
Yeah, why not? Because that guy is so generic in this. Like, he is so just, like, it's like that show Prison Break, which I guess is coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
Those like, two main guys sort of look very similar. I mean, they're supposed to be brothers, but they look very Wentworth Miller and the other dude. They look kind
of
similar.
Is one of them Mr. Coldface from the Arrow Legion of Tomorrow?
I don't
shows?
Know. I never watched it, so I'm going to say yes.
There's another just kind of really bland looking bald guy.
That's, but it's like if you split the difference on them, you would get this guy.
Yeah,
like he's just yeah.
So this is okay. So this is the future as imagined by a Riff Track movie from the early 90s, and the music is 2003-ish? When was Linkin Park big?
No, I'd say that's probably around that. Yeah.
And not in a, you know, that kind of screaming, like, falling in my tears.
Yeah,
that song, like, it wasn't like, and I'm not saying that's a good song, but that.
It's a great song.
But that, no, but even like, even any terrible example of that genre with good action happening could be forgivable because it's like, whatever, the beat works. But it was that, but not a lot of action happened. Oh, by the way, this is the least action movie that's ever happened in the. I mean, this is like Charles Bronson movies have more action in them.
Yeah,
it is. There, nothing fucking
happens. For being a perfect weapon, he kills like three guys.
There is an epic fight. So they're trying to set up this kind of battle your way up a skyscraper action sequence at the end of the film. He chokes one guy and shoots another one.
Yeah.
That's the lack of, and I'm not like a big violence junkie, but the lack of anything happening in this film is fucking shocking.
Yeah.
Of that done to a rocking soundtrack that nothing happened. Like, it's just rocking music to, we're looking at stuff happen.
Well, and going back to sort of the music thing, there's a theme that it's like the love theme, and it's some, some like Nordic guy just screaming in the largest bathroom you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Recorded over some sort of like, just droney track. And you have no idea. It's really more upsetting than any other kind of mood. Cause you can't figure out what he's saying. It doesn't sound good, whatever it is. It sounds very painful, but, it's supposed to be, erotic because they're always making out when that song starts. You know,
in the end, it's and it doesn't sound like this music, but it's done in that same tone as, remember the '90s where every sex scene was set to that song that, there was that like 3-year period where that was in every movie.
I don't remember that big. I remember the other one, the like the sad. Don't walk.
Yeah.
Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah. That's it. Well, that was a little bit more kind of normal music. This was like Vast or something like that.
I don't. I mean, it's the same. It's Enigma. Is the
Oh, is the one I'm doing?
Yeah, they both are.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That one was Return to Innocence. Available on Pure Moods.
Indeed, I picked up at least 3 of those at Starbucks. It was used in that same way, except this was like a little bit more like. He was a guy in an emo band that wanted to make a really soulful song in between doing the Falling in My Tears song.
It's a guy that listened to like Nine Inch Nails, listened to Hurt or Something I Could Never Have from Nine Inch Nails. And then went, I bet I can't do this. And was right.
Yeah, no, he definitely hit that one inside of the park.
Yeah.
Just really just a grounder to the pitcher. I think that's I shouldn't use baseball terms.
No, that was dead on.
I don't know sports.
Another great moment in that that climb up the tower is so when the hero, I guess I'm going to use that word, was awakened, they sent him on the mission to kill Steven Seagal, the director. And we'll get to the greatness of Steven Seagal in a moment.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have to spend some minutes on
that. Yeah. But so he is joined by a character. I believe they call him Kronos, if I'm getting that right. I don't.
Kronos was the black dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, he's a killer like that guy. And immediately dies. He immediately dies. They throw a grappling over a wall, climb up a wall. The guy falls off a wall. And so they're like, well, we needed to kill a black guy. So check. Like, it just felt like that. Like there was no reason for that to happen. I don't know why they did it at all.
Yeah. I've never felt happier with a prediction because I literally, this guy shows up on the screen and go, oh crap, there's a black guy. He's dead.
Yeah, so they're gonna do that action movie trope.
They're setting up the big fight up the office building. And I say to John, oh, this guy's dead by floor 5. He didn't make it through the front door.
Yeah. He immediately, immediately falls off. Like, cause he's like, he tries to stop a guard that's on the thing and they both fall off.
Yeah.
And there was no reason for that character to be there cause he just falls off and then the bad guy looks at his watch. The hero looks at his watch cause he's got a limited time to get this thing. So he's like, yeah, wish there was something I could do, buddy. And then, just goes.
He was almost like Scary Movie where it was such a trope that it's like, it almost seemed like this movie is a hair's breadth away from being like a satire of the style of film that it is. But okay. So let's go back to Kronos, the world's greatest black guy.
Yeah.
Now you said a great phrase and this, I'm glad you brought it up because it's something I didn't want to forget. Killer like that guy.
Yeah.
The programmed killers, right?
Yeah.
How did they all show up at the end to help him?
Yeah. So at the end, after he, I'm going to say just defeats the director.
Yeah. Yeah. So he fights his way up the building by killing one guy really easily.
Yeah. And he gets to Seagal and they have a thing. And the fight with Seagal is great. Cause you know, it's a trope with a lot of, Kung Fu movies or things like that, where the villain is so powerful that he barely does anything. He's like he's very stoic in his moves. And I think that's what they were trying to cover up. Like they were trying to like, well, we'll just do this. Because the reality is Steven Seagal, the most kung fu he does is while sitting down.
Yeah.
He takes a guy's hand and is doing like some like wrist twisty moves to show him how you control something. But when it's actually like standing up, it's very sad. It's just,
Yeah.
There's that Key and Peele sketch where, it deals with that trope of like they go to visit the hired killer in the woods. And he's like, I've been out the game for the while. You know, and he's like, no, we need you. And he's like, well, I still have it. And he keeps trying to take, he's like, let me show you. And he keeps trying to take the guy's gun. And he's just terrible at doing kung fu.
Oh, that's fun.
And that's basically what this was.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, ugh. He's moving his arms. And you just hear him getting winded.
Yeah. And he does that Steven Seagal move where he does like the disarm and then spin the guy kind of thing. And then he does a lot of like handsy, I'm controlling your hand, you know, na-na-na-na-na stuff. So anyway, after that epic battle.
Also, he kicks him through a wall by kicking him in the shin. Oh, like he goes through this epic kick and he can barely lift his leg.
Okay.
And like it just, like you see him like kind of lift leg and kick and the neck and then cut. Hurled through the wall.
Also, it's pathetic. Amazing. Pathetic. Earlier in the film, they showed him kicking a guy to death, and they had to use a stunt double, and it was so bad. It was like shadow face. No,
well, it was because it was a flashback.
Yeah.
So it was him reminiscing about because Steven Seagal used to be a controller, which as I'm doing this voice, is another thing I should bring up. Steven Seagal's accent in this movie changes constantly.
Yeah.
And not to just constantly reference other things, but there's this comedian, Tom Segura, that does a great bit about there was a reality show with Steven Seagal where he was like with the police.
Yeah. He was like a detective somewhere or something. Not a detective, like a deputy or something.
And so Tom Segura has to see how Steven Seagal like just basically takes on the accent of whoever he's talking to.
Mm.
And that's absolutely what's happening here. Cause at some point he's like, oh, y'all, come on. Like, oh, we got to do it. Like this is weird sort of like urban kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
And then later he's just Steven Seagal. Like, and there's no explanation for it. And it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's, I'm a stoic master sitting in my chair. Shit. Yeah, I can't believe that some bitch come walk up here. I tell you what, you don't know I am with my daughter. Like, he's like, what the fuck just happened? You're just, also, we went from stoic master to some guy at a porch in NOLA.
Yeah.
All right, so Stoic Master, wait.
Oh, yeah, so he goes to the back. He's talking about when he was a controller, he had to kill his protege.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it is this epic kung fu fight that you see, and the whole time Steven Seagal's face is masked, like in shadow.
Yeah.
Until the end when he kind of steps forward and is this clearly, like, badly photoshopped. Like, it didn't even, like, fit. Like where the face would be on a face. It was like a floating
Steven Seagal face.
Yeah, it was way too up, like high on the eyes were on the forehead.
Oh, it was really, yeah. I mean, it was like beautiful. Like
it was pretty great.
So, okay. So back to the epic battle that didn't happen against Steven Seagal. He's defeated.
Oh, yeah. So that happened.
How do the other.
Well, so that happens. And then because Steven Seagal shows the perfect weapon how he's been manipulated.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And the perfect weapon is like.
I skipped the entire big reveal. Sorry.
Yeah. and so the perfect weapon goes, it's like, oh, okay. So he takes out. So it turns out Steven Seagal was right all along. Never distrust the state. The state's always right. And then he goes back to Steven Seagal, and Steven Seagal's like, hey, great job. You should be a controller now. And the guy's like, no, thank you. And Steven Seagal says, no, you should absolutely, you're perfect for it. And he's like, I'm a perfect killer. And he stabs Steven Seagal. And then he always says, it's my destiny. And he takes a sword. He's like, this is my destiny. And goes out to be, I guess, murdered by everyone else. By all the cops that are showing up because the stabbed by Steven Seagal got stabbed alarm is going on.
Yeah, okay, wait, let me stop you just there for 1 second. Because this is a big point that I found the quality of this filmmaking. So... Jason Statham / Jean-Claude Van Damme / George St. Pierre stabs Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
Picks up in a dramatic, following him the whole way, picks up these two, there's two swords on a plinth behind the scene. He picks up one of the swords, unsheathes it, and says, you know, this is my destiny.
This is my destiny.
I've always been destined to do this. And he walks out of the room with this sword. This is like the big thing. And yeah. He's about to, okay. So, he walks out and then, so yes, you're right. The Steven Seagal got stabbed alarm had gone off. And the shock troops are running up the steps and he's about to fight them, I guess.
Yeah. No, I see. I never even got that. It seemed like up? He was just like, all right, hey, here I am. Take me out. Oh,
that's right. Yeah. I think it was.
It seemed like suicide by cop.
Yeah, you're right. It's like a suicide by cop kind of concept. But then the waves of other trained killer perfect weapons roll in and kill all the police people.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
I don't know. Because like it
I'm confused.
Yeah.
Because kindergarten cop villain.
So apparently Kronos was apparently one of those fighters and was part of the resistance as well. So I don't know if all these other fighters were part of the resistance, but I don't know what signaled them to go save the day.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. Okay. That actually answers my question. Yeah, so there's just the resistance is bigger than I was thinking. Okay. That answers my problem.
Another thing we talked about during the movie. That is very weird is Steven Seagal's facial hair. Yeah. It's very upsetting. Like it looks almost fake. It looks like he saw like 90s, early 2000 era Steve Harvey, where Steve Harvey had that big, like thick, almost Groucho Marx kind of mustache and just went, I want that on my whole face.
Yeah. I think it is fake.
Yeah.
Cause he looked like Julian from the Trailer Park Boys.
But I also think he would, whether or not it's fake, he would tell you it was real.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that maybe if it's not fake, it is heavily dyed and maybe that's what's coming across as fake.
Yeah. I focus my chi.
Yeah. Like he's got like this, what do you call that? It's like a full goatee, but he's got a full goatee. Like his goatee looks like someone that would tell you about how good they are at eating pussy. That's the kind of goatee he has. Yeah.
Speaking of that, on that same note. There is one of the most upsetting scenes involving a nude woman in this movie. And so Steven Seagal has this sort of concubine that he killed her father a while ago in Stockholm Syndrome. She loves him. And this scene is entirely just, you do not see her face at all.
Sorry, let me just stop you for one second there. John wasn't being flippant by saying Stockholm Syndrome, she loves him now.
Yeah.
There's a news report. Was it a news report?
No, it's just a line of dialogue that said basically exactly that. Like, yep, you know, Stockholm Syndrome. No,
but who says that?
The controller guy.
Yeah, the controller guy said, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. The kindergarten cop villain says, oh, Stockholm Syndrome, she loves him now. Sorry. It was just the most flippant, like, oh, no, she's being in a life of being raped constantly. But no, Stockholm Syndrome. Shrug shoulders.
You know how that goes.
Blink.
Yeah.
sorry.
But so you never see in this particular scene, you never see the actress's face. It's just her lying sort of on her stomach and on her side. And you see her butt from a weird angle. And it's Steven Seagal talking about meridians in the body and nerves going into the spine.
Yeah.
And how she needs to learn acupuncture and massage so one day she can do it to him. And it does not, I mean, like, it doesn't do anything for the plot. It doesn't do anything for the character. It's just this weird moment of Steven Seagal being like, hey, can I, like, touch a naked woman
in a
very upsetting manner and make it seem smart and spiritual?
The angle they shot it at is, you could look up her butthole. Like, I mean,
It was really.
Like, it was just this really, it's almost like discolored air. Like, it's just like this, like. It doesn't make like the where it's shot from doesn't make sense. But here's what I was thinking though, since that scene happened, and that's all I've thought about since then. I bet that she actually is a real actress, and they couldn't get her that day.
That would not surprise me
because they didn't show her face, and she didn't talk during that scene.
Yeah.
So either she didn't want to admit to being in it, so she you know her you know union rep or whatever you call that in Hollywood agreed. She doesn't talk, her face isn't in that scene, so she can say body double, or it is actually a body double.
But it was such a bizarre scene of just like Steven Seagal explaining acupuncture to you, to the audience. Like,
oh, really? Really?
There was no, it was like, I feel like, but at the same time, again, talking about how like that Asian influence, the idea that Steven Seagal was like, no, that's got to be in the movie, is that was in his writer too. Like, no, there's got to be a scene where I talk about Chinese medicine.
Yeah. And I should point out, the butthole angle is not the most awkward part of that
scene.
Yeah,
no, that is.
Like, that is.
Like, you feel bad for everyone in that movie that isn't Steven Seagal. Like, in that scene.
It's really, really off-putting.
Yeah. But all this being said, this movie is absolutely worth it for the final scene. It is.
Oh, yeah.
So,
wait, before we get to the final scene.
Oh, I can't. Well, I don't know how much we want to get into it, but.
No, we're going to give away the whole thing.
Okay.
Is there anything else we need to cover in this movie? Because I really feel like there's a lot to unpack from when that happens.
There's the weird thing, and this is really, this is bottom of the barrel in terms of weird stuff in this movie, but there's the weird thing where at the beginning, so this guy, the resistance politician guy who pirated the television. It then goes to the Perfect Killer goes to take him out in a club where he is meeting the resistance guys meeting with two other just random people and explaining that the resistance is against the state, which you'd think they would already know. And all the while, this sort of geisha is dancing. And the geisha is the woman that he turns out to be the woman that he thinks was killed in the past. Looks like his ex-girlfriend or whatever. But the big thing with that is, so they talk about this geisha and are basically like talking about buying her to have sex with her. And the politician, rebel politician guy does, I guess, because then it goes to him in his home and he wants her to dress like a chola. Is his exact words.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah. Inexplicably now she's like just wearing tons of eyeliner and a flannel shirt.
Yeah.
And he's like, where's that chola? It's really upsetting and strange.
Okay, so yes, upsetting and strange. But also, let's just get back to the point that the leader of the resistance against Steven Seagal.
The awful state, yeah.
Is a guy that buys whores right. And treats women like property.
Yeah.
These are also, our heroes.
Also is racist, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, so that's, so again, I don't understand how bad the government, but also, so what was that? Why did she have a syringe?
Because I think she was supposed to kill him. I think she was trying to assassinate him. But, and I also think that,
but how?
With murder?
But they're the same corporation.
Yeah.
So why would you send two different murderers without informing the other? To kill one guy.
I think that was part of...
Oh, that was part of the thing to try to get them back together.
Yes, but it doesn't make any sense why... That would make sense, because if...
We're not back together, but yeah.
Yeah, if the controller's trying to make them meet again, and the state's like, how come you didn't kill that prostitute?
Oh, so this was a meet cute.
It was a meet cute.
Oh, this is adorable then. Oh, my mistake.
The state didn't know, I guess, maybe that she was... already on the way to kill him.
No, weird. I like this meet cute idea. This is like an adorable eyes met over a coffee shop moment.
But I also like, now that I'm thinking about it, I think if you were to ask the director about like why is the leader of your resistance a giant piece of shit? You know, just like, oh, politicians, man, they're all bullshit.
Yeah.
Like that's what it felt. It felt like this sort of brush away, like, oh, you know, they're all terrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I would like to hear him say this because I'm curious as to the man that wrote and directed this, what their kind of modus vivendi is, because I'm confused. I don't get what he was trying to say. I mean, frankly, I don't understand the movie because I think we need to get to the final break reveal and then John, why don't you tell us? You're better at this
so,
than I am.
The perfect weapon has stabbed Steven Seagal. I almost don't want to do this because you need to see this. This is amazing. So pause, stop, whatever. Go watch this movie, then come back and listen to me explain it to you. But so Steven Seagal, the evil leader, the director,
quote unquote,
gets stabbed, and the perfect weapon leaves to go get assassinated by a cop, and he doesn't. All these other killers show up, and they go to the roof, and hold their swords up, and a flying camera films them.
Yeah, and the TV say, "We are all free."
We are all free, and everyone kind of, and you see these shots of various like citizens just like looking up and seeing it, not really reacting, not really being like, "Oh, good." They're just like, "Well, that's on TV now," and then it cuts back to the inside where Steven Seagal is sitting, stabbed, bleeding out on a couch, and who enters the room but Steven Seagal?
Yeah,
and he's like, "You've done your job well, brother." And so it's apparently like a Saddam Hussein like decoy thing. And they have a little conversation about giving the other one a noble death. Oh, that's the great line. The standing Steven Seagal is like, "There's a saying among my people."
Yeah.
Which is among a weird thing to say to Steven Seagal when you're Steven Seagal. And then, then he finishes. He's like, "Give me an honorable death."
But how does he finish him, John?
With the sword?
Wait, the sword?
The sword that the guy pulled off the wall earlier.
You mean the sword that isn't there?
The sword that is not there at all.
Okay, thank you. It's a small thing, but it's that attention to detail that really makes this movie great.
Yeah, and so there's this weird little exchange with him. He's like, And I don't even remember what the saying, my people. Oh no, it's the most important thing is how a man like gives his last breath.
Yeah, yeah.
And his last breath was like, please kill me good.
No, he says avenge me.
Oh yeah, he's avenge me. And so yeah, he kills him, and then like the movie ends, like it goes to the credits, but then there's still other scenes. Like there's shots of the guys on the roof still being all happy. And then there's a shot of Steven Seagal with the alive Steven Seagal with a cadre of soldiers walking to this futuristic helicopter that he then pilots away, which is a hilarious shot.
It's really great.
This just sets us up for a sequel that God, I hope happens. And I hope everyone ends with a new Steven Seagal, like coming out of the wings being like, good job.
I need the sequel to happen. Please, please. But here you said something interesting. You said Saddam Hussein, like, I took it as that's literally his twin brother, which I think is more hilarious.
I think you're actually more right. Because he does say brother.
But the thing is, saying where I come from in my land or whatever you say, what was the line?
Yeah, it was like there's a saying among my people.
Among my people.
Which makes that even better.
Yeah, like, but that's the thing.
You wouldn't get it.
Yeah. I don't understand because, yeah, there's a lot that...
there's a thing among my generation, the people that were born 2 minutes before you were born.
I don't... So, okay, so here's some more... Okay. So Steven Seagal... Other Steven Seagal is revealed saying, you did a good job, brother. Everything came to according to plan or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, before... Don't let me get away from the plan part because I'm about to be pedantic here, but... Or annoying. He has the same outfit and glasses on.
Yeah.
Why would you have the same glasses on?
There's a two-for-one sale.
Why would you be...
BOGO.
That infuriated me. It's up there with, if you watch this movie, people, just pay attention to lapel pins and you can join my heart.
Okay, I don't think you have to pay attention to them. I think they will just sort of show up. They will force their way into your vision.
Yeah, sure. What was I going to say? What was the other thing I told you?
About the plan?
Oh, yeah. Everything went according to plan, brother. What?
Yeah.
What?
So...
What do you mean? What?
The plan was for Steven Seagal to murder his brother, apparently. And his brother was like, that sounds like a good idea.
So
how can I help make this happen?
The plan is I overthrow my own government, sort of, but then have my brother be revealed to run away afterwards in a helicopter?
These are questions that the sequel will answer, undoubtedly.
I feel like, and forgive me, if I'm being brash here, I feel like things didn't go according to plan.
I think things went absolutely according to plan for the various plans. He did get to the leader. That worked. That plan worked.
Wait, who got the leader?
The Falcon, which, by the way, that's the perfect weapon's name is... No, I'm sorry, it's not Falcon, it's Condor. His name is Condor.
No, but that wasn't part of Steven Seagal's plan.
No, but it was part of the other plan, so that plan worked.
But how would he know?
Because he's the director, he's got ears everywhere.
No, he's not the director.
Well, one of them is the director.
Yeah.
Not the director of the film, but the director.
Yeah.
And then the other plan went according to plan because he fooled him into thinking that he killed him. But he actually killed his brother, which was all part of the plan. Booyah.
Oh, well, my mistake. I didn't realize how clear it was. Boy, do I feel like a fool for not understanding it.
It's pretty obvious. There's a lot of subtext there.
Yeah. Like how he, cause in the end, now they're set up cause they had this big, let's, here. You be the Steven Seagal that actually runs everything in the movie, the one that dies. I'm going to be your brother behind the scenes.
Hey.
Okay. Hey, brother, I got a great plan.
Yeah, what is it, bro?
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to make it a really overly complicated plan to usurp your position.
Testify.
Okay. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to get, you know, those perfect weapons that we have?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to get one to kill a guy that's against us.
Yeah, that great, sounds great.
Great idea so far. Okay, so he's gonna do it wrong, and we're gonna have to reprogram him.
Okay.
Okay, so good, you're with me here. So with the reprogramming, we're gonna get one of our other guys that's a mole to stop the reprogramming, right? So,
No, I'm still with it, I guess.
So,
okay.
What you don't understand is that we've been programming the first guy to just follow me. There's a first guy. He has a girlfriend in his head that we're now going to spring on him.
Oh, wait.
Exactly. It's amazing. So this hush whisper has heard my voice a little bit. So anyway, brother, what we're going to do we're going to have that guy. Yeah. What's up?
Cut to the chase here.
Yeah.
Do I get murdered?
Exactly. You're going to be stabbed.
Yeah, no, I'm totally on board.
Inside of our office. Sorry. I mean, shit, man. We're going to be stabbed inside of our office.
This is the perfect plan.
Good.
For the perfect weapon.
Fast forward 3 months. Brother, our plan came exactly to fruition as we laid it out.
Avenge me.
What? Also, yeah, thank you for bringing it up. Avenge you. Avenge you for what then? It was part of the plan. If the plan was articulated as well as he stated, avenge you for what? Avenge you for great planning?
Please avenge my murder that you came up with.
Avenge our great planning skills. We've been hoisted by our own petards.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what his endgame is, but it's going to be a doozy if this is any indication.
Hi, other brother. How's the plan going? It's going great. We got the blonde lady in a cell underneath. Oh, sorry. We got the blonde lady in a cell underneath our compound/hotel.
Yeah, like that. Her whole thing never really made any sense at all. Especially the later reveal that she had an accent. Like, I think the idea was...
I didn't mind that much, to be honest with you.
See, I think... Well, I guess the idea with that is, like, to show that, she was playing a character this whole time is actually who she is. But it was more just, okay, why not?
Yeah. Like, because it was swept up with the wave of garbage that was this movie. True. I think if... You know, this actually brings up a thing. I've not talked about this on the show before, but it's something important to my heart. Carrie Fisher's accent in A New Hope was great. People complain that her accent's all over the place. The point is, when she's playing the senator, she's doing a highfalutin senator voice.
Yeah.
And then when she's talking to the rebel, she's acting like herself. It always annoys me when people say her accent's all over the place. I've
honestly never heard that.
Oh, really? I've heard this complaint multiple times.
Huh.
And it irritates the shit out of me. You're like, no, that's like actually, it's one of the few things that's written well in that movie.
Huh? No, and I'm not like saying that way. That's like that's dumb. I've never heard that.
The blonde lady in this movie is better than Carrie Fisher.
Okay,
and she should be cast in Episode 9.
Sure.
Yeah.
that makes sense.
Oh, my name's Luke Skywalker. This is my other brother Luke with 2 U's. Skywalker. Now that's
the whole if what is Supreme?
Oh my God, we're in a Timothy Zahn universe in this movie.
Oh God,
that was the director's clone. It's a director with 2 eyes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's Steven Seagal with 2 A's.
Exactly.
Oh, that means Titus Parr, the director, is actually the clone of Titus Parr.
Exactly, he's Jack Parr's kid that was cloned.
Yeah. Oh, for those of you that don't know, that's good. Just keep not knowing because those books are garbage.
God bless. So there's two Steven Seagals, which I've
there's not enough Steven Seagals.
There's a thing where like there's when I'm watching a shitty movie, sometimes I'll pitch to myself like what could possibly save this film.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, I'm not saying I had a chance because again, the editing was quick enough that I wasn't labored to sit through the film.
Yeah.
But if I did take a second where if like John had paused and said, "Hey Alex, what's the one thing that could salvage this movie?" I wish I could have thought of, just randomly after Seagal's dead, his twin brother shows up. I wish I had that kind of stupid thinking.
Just throw in another one.
It was the joy when that happened. I've never felt that level of like, fuck you, Orphan Black. That's acting.
Well, I also like that you had brought up when we were watching it that Steven Seagal in this movie is largely... similar to Marlon Brando in Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
And there's like, having never seen the movie, I've just seen the documentary about it, Lost Souls, which I highly recommend. You should check that out. But it was very much this like, how many scenes can my character sit down during?
Yeah, totally.
Like it was.
Yeah. I shouldn't have said, yeah, totally there. I'm agreeing with my own point from earlier.
No, I was right. Yeah. I knew I was right.
I was more agreeing with the thing I'm about to say now. Is because while we were talking about that, I said, you know, it'd be great if there was, because I said, if there was a tiny Marlon Brando clone, the only thing that would make this movie better, because I think, but I actually sort of predicted the end of this movie really quickly in.
You know what? It's what's starting to hit me now is that we could probably write and sell the sequel to this movie to Titus Parr. I mean, he might have a grand scheme of where these characters are going, but if we write a sequel and the reveal is that that Steven Seagal has a tiny mini-me Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
I'm totally happy to do it. I think we need to start working on it.
I can't imagine a single person that would not want to pay money to see that.
Well,
Nope, that person does not exist.
John, I don't know if you've done this, but have you met,
Gore Vidal? Wait, is Gore Vidal dead?
I hope so.
Because that's the one guy I could think maybe wouldn't be into it. But I think everyone else would love to see a tiny Steven Seagal.
Yeah, I mean, honest, and I'm not kidding. I just went through the Rolodex of people I know in my head, and I can't think of anybody that would actually be annoyed by having a tiny Steven Seagal show up.
Yeah, I think I know a lot of people that would be very stoked
by that. Well,
particularly like, and I'm not talking like a little Steven Seagal. Well, it'd be great to see like maybe like a little Steven Seagal that does like CG Yoda fighting from like the second Star Wars prequel or whatever.
Yeah.
I want a little Steven Seagal that is also just fat and out of shape. That is just like, oh God. Oh,
that would stairs. Make me, that would make
crap.
Me so happy.
He's got a tiny chaise lounge that he's sitting on.
Oh, just oh, minimal movement.
Yeah.
Oh, it'd be great. Or the full size Steven Seagal could throw mini Steven Seagal at other people to do his fighting for him.
And the tiny Steven Seagal is annoyed by that. Just like gets in their pocket and just takes a nap and then wakes up and murders them.
Yeah.
Breaks their arm.
All right. So Perfect Weapon.
Perfect movie.
Coming out of it on the other side. Here's what I have to say. So having sat through, I mean, I've sat through some garbage movies in my life. Somewhat enjoyable film.
Yeah, you could do worse. Like, it's bad. It's not good, but you could do a whole lot worse.
Yeah, it's quick. It's shot well. And when I say shot well, I don't mean it shot well, but it's shot so much better than the script would you would. Like, if you read the script and then pictured the movie, it looks a lot better than you would have pictured.
If you like the color, pardon me, if you like the color green.
Yeah.
This is
there's a lot of green gels.
Yeah, that's very futuristic.
Yeah,
a lot of colored lights in general, but mainly green.
But I'm not saying no. If you've listened to this whole episode and have not seen the movie, I'm not saying you should watch it. But it's not the worst. I mean, it's on Netflix, and if you're bored, it's probably not the worst thing to do in the world.
Yeah, if I would say. Oh, I know, because I don't even want to say just skip to the end, because like it was worth it, and I wouldn't normally say that, but the reveal, the awful Steven Seagal reveal at the end,
yeah,
like if I just like found that clip on YouTube, like, oh, that's funny, but it's the journey that gets you there.
The twin reveal was pretty epic.
Yeah, I hope you actually watch this movie before listening to us gripe about it. Only for that, just because that was so, like, I burst out of my chair. I was so excited when it happened.
If you and if you're not going to watch the movie, try to find the scene with the flashback Steven Seagal with the bad shadow
that
face.
That is also good, too.
Because I was telling John, it's like that scene in Harry Potter where they show Hagrid from years ago, Chamber of Secrets, I think it was, where they flashback to Hagrid, and he's just in the most obvious shadow face, because they can't show young Robbie Coltrane?
Yeah, Rob Coltrane.
Yeah,
that's right.
So they just did just shadows, and it's the most obvious thing ever. It's that, and then just randomly like, oh look, a horror show of Photoshop is showing up there.
Well, that's my initial thought was Anthony Hopkins in Westworld.
But that was done a lot better.
Yeah, but this was like the super low rent version of that.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, that was cool. Can we do that? Yeah, I can totally do that.
Yeah, it's we can watch how this happens.
Let me just cut out this photograph and just stick it to the film.
Yeah. Anything else about Perfect Weapon?
I think we covered everything in a Perfect Weapon.
All right, good. Let's we got a few minutes left. Let's cover some things, because I have nothing to say about. Well, I mean, I have a lot to say about it. Blah blah blah. I can't do this on the solo show, is what I'm saying. Legion.
Yeah.
Going from I think things look better. I think that's probably the prettiest show I've seen in a decade. I mean, that show looked gorgeous.
It's amazing. And it also, one of my favorite things about it is that style serves the story.
Yeah.
It's not just like, let's just be stylish to be stylish. Like, it really, really all works.
Yeah. When they showed the Asylum bit where they did the dance number in it,
yeah,
it reminded me of like the best parts of like American Horror Story, where that kind of like mm-hmm. overly kind of, I don't know if you want to say like saturated, that kind of Wes Anderson-y yeah. style where it's like, it. But oh my God, yeah, that show just was, lush.
I was almost upset. This was a very 90-degree or huge turn that we yeah. just took here talking about something that's actually good. But I was actually kind of upset when I got to episode 2 that it had to sort of coalesce and become a show.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, it's a great show.
Yeah.
But like the first episode is so amazing, and there's this bonkers thing that when you're like, oh, okay, no, you have to like be a show.
Yeah. Like, and even when it became a show, it was still like, there were yeah. still like really daring, weird things. Yeah. I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but like that dance sequence was amazing.
Even when the show is being like a little sort of self-indulgent with its like stylistic stuff, like there's the whole other, if you don't want to give anything away, the one part where there's that one character dancing through all these scenes.
Oh yeah.
Like that even works.
Yeah.
Like it never feels this like, okay, like, you know, I've been on the show before complaining viciously and correctly about Westworld, and this show doesn't have any of that. This show deals with some really far out concepts and just lets them lie.
Yeah.
It has enough respect for you as the audience to be like, yeah, this is weird, and here it is. It doesn't be like, whoa, isn't this weird? Oh my God.
Yeah.
It just does it, and it's awesome.
If you're so concerned about spoilers, but this is, I'm going to say something that happens, but it makes no sense out of context and it won't spoil it when it happens. But that the first time you go into that ice cube.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the greatest show ever. Yeah. Like this is, it's like Twin Peaks level weird.
And that is played so well because that character could have been like way too wacky.
Yeah.
And the casting really, I think, helped with that as well. But they really just played it like, so it's just weird and bizarre, but still kind of funny. And I think that was a huge thing too, is that there's a lot of levity in this show. Is that there is some funny stuff. There were some sort of like, I don't know if I want to call them ironic, but these sort of like Chandler Bing-esque reactions of the main character to a couple of things.
Yeah.
They were a little bit like, okay, just because like that is a thing is sort of played out to a degree. Like that's not new. Every character does that now. That's not a unique trait.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of the few downsides I have to the show is that, there's a little bit of hammy.
Yeah.
And I for as brilliant as it is, I really doubt its ability to do a season 2 with any kind of.
I'm curious because, I mean, I have like, based on my enjoyment of the 2 seasons of Fargo, I have faith in that guy. I think he can do.
Oh, was that Fargo guy?
Yeah.
It's I didn't even realize that.
Crawley? I might be wrong on that last name, but like I have faith that they're going to do good. But at the same time, it is going to be hard since it was such a journey of the single character for the first one. How you keep that going without sort of hitting the same beats or repeating yourself or you know whatever. But it's a great, amazing show.
Yeah, there's I've liked her because I like deadpan kind of Wednesday Addams style people ever. But mm-hmm. Audrey Plaza fucking knocked it out of the goddamn park.
She was really good.
Yeah, and I know I'm not like, you know, breaking any new ground by saying that, but holy shit, she was really good.
Yeah, it was a great part for her. And someone was telling me that she was initially like, they wanted her to read for one of like the love interest or the sister character. And she was like, no, I want to be this person. Which whether or not that's true, like,
yeah,
it would not make any sense for her to be anything else in that show.
Yeah.
Cause she was yeah, really, really good.
I could actually see her as the love interest. I don't know anybody's name in any show ever, but, the non-touchy lady.
Yeah. Sydney.
Sydney. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. I mean, I don't think it would, I mean, obviously, it would be a waste of her, like, now that I realize what she can do, but, like, I could see that. But, holy shit, she knocks it out of the goddamn park.
Yeah,
like,
and it only gets better, because at first, I was a little... At first, I was unsure. Like, when her character first shows up, I'm like, oh, okay. But then, like, when it starts to sort of be this other thing, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. But then it's great.
Yeah.
It just gets
really, that show really walked like a really cool, like kind of fine edge.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, you know, kind of doubtful about season 2. But here's one of the things I really love. So the Marvel universe is so fucked when it comes to, so you've watched at least a good amount of the Netflix Marvel shows.
Yeah.
The big green guy, the event is, uh-huh. is Avengers Part One, that sort of thing. I like how they dealt with the rest of the Marvel Universe in the show is that at one point there's a tiny flash to one thing that I don't want to give away, but there's one tiny flash that may hint at, you know, something, and that's it. The rest of the Marvel Universe is fucking ignored horribly.
Well, it's also...
Not horribly, but, you know, completely.
Right, but yeah. It's also, I mean, you could argue that sort of thing where... And it makes no secret about being related to the X-Men because the X thing is in the logo of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
But since the X-Men universe is so separate from the other sort of Marvel universe,
yeah,
that I think it's easier to get away with that.
Oh, but still, I just mean, like, I thought it was kind of in that they don't go, well, you're a mutant, you know, like those people in Connecticut at the Xavier or New York or wherever the X-Men house is. Because that's the kind of level I am of nerdity that I had to correct myself going, no, I'm pretty sure it's in New York, not Connecticut.
Yep.
Because that's important, John.
No, it's extremely important.
Yeah. So
nothing more important than canon.
You know, again, yeah, let's just, reminders, 36 and single. Mm-hmm.
Have you put that in your Tinder profile? Canonically accurate.
Yeah, canonically accurate. Like you have no idea my the amount of canon that I operate under. I have found when I play video games online, make a lot of cake boss references for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's bosses, so I just keep
making
good reason. Yeah. Don't know why. Legion, I rarely say it, but holy shit do I recommend it, audience
also,
out there, if you haven't watched
it. A huge thing for me, also, 8 episodes. Because that's my complaint with every single Marvel show, beyond other ones I've had with them, is that they're all way too long. They all are at least like 2 or 3 episodes too long. Like they all Jessica Jones really repeats itself in a lot of ways. Luke Cage drags in a couple of places. Daredevil, the whole thing with the Russians at the beginning, you absolutely did not need. Anything with Foggy, you absolutely do not need. Like, these things could be a lot tighter, and I like that it was a show. It wasn't a show that was released on Netflix. It was a show on FX, on a cable show, and they went, we're doing 8 episodes. Because I think any more, unless you're on, like, network television, I guess, just because the whole paradigm of television is changing in general, I don't know why you have to be tied to these same things, particularly if you're just releasing to Netflix or something like that. There's no reason you need to have a 13-episode season. Because most of those stories are not worth 13 episodes. And Legion covers so much ground. Even there's 2 episodes where like sort of the same peril is in play for both episodes. But they do so much with it. And it never really has that huge lag that a lot of shows does.
Yeah, totally.
That a lot of shows do. So, yeah. Huge fan. Can't recommend it enough.
Now I've gone on about on the show before, but you have not seen it. So Netflix shows, they have too many episodes. Oh my God, is Iron Fist just too many episodes and nothing fucking happens? So it just popped in my head now, a great analogy. It's Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the first season, couldn't go quickly because they had to catch up with Captain America 2 when the whole Hydra reveal happened.
Sure.
And that played into their universe. So they had a whole bunch of lag because they couldn't jump past that one point. They had a spot in time that they had to catch up with when the release date of that movie was. I just realized that Iron Fist, I think a lot of the reason it blows is because the Defenders, the coalition show is coming out in August. So he couldn't do anything significant because all the other shows have all the plot lines set up.
Well, that was one complaint I heard repeatedly about Iron Fist is, you know, I guess Rosario Dawson shows up in this one as well. And at no point does she go, oh, hey, I know other people that do this kind of stuff.
No, she says it like 3-4 times.
Oh, does she?
Yeah. In the worst dumb way possible. And then he goes, no, I don't need help. I'm like, I'm really cool.
That's kind of the problem with, with 3-4,
but like, you know, more than one.
With this sort of thing is like when you're reading comics and they do these, you know, you're like you have these teams, but then they go off and they do these other things. You kind of know when you're reading them like, well, Captain America can't call Iron Man because Iron Man is currently having this adventure over here. Whereas when I'm watching the second Captain America movie, Winter Soldier, which I enjoyed very much. Like I liked that it was sort of like a spy movie thing. When the whole thing with Hydra's happening, I'm just like, why isn't he calling Iron Man? Like
why
isn't this happening? Because there's no indication that anything else, because these comics are released month to month and every month, there's no time reference in these movies about when other things are happening. So you're just like, yeah, where's Iron Man? You know, other people call. And so that was sort of a thing. In Luke Cage, it didn't bother me so much when Rosario Dawson kind of made some half comments towards Daredevil, because Luke Cage just seemed like so much of his own thing. But in particular with this one, since I know he's fighting with Iron Fist, since he's fighting the Hand or whatever it is. Like, these are things that showed up in Daredevil. Like, you should be telling him, hey, I got a buddy that does this shit.
You know, now I'm thinking about it. It's referenced. I don't remember if she references to him or there's the Chinese lady, the kind of other lead that isn't.
Yeah, I'm.
It's definitely referenced, but yeah, maybe it isn't like explicitly. No, I think it is. I think he does the no, I have to take care of this myself thing.
Okay.
Like, either way,
that's like if they at least give it, but if they at least give it a nod, I'm fine. It's like time travel in a movie. If time travel if they go like, yeah, time travel, whatever, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But either way, the show's bullshit and don't waste your time. And I'm someone that has like, I mean, a ton of time to waste. And boy, is that just don't, it's just do anything else. Like any, like watch something you've watched before
in
over
reverse,
again.
Watch it backwards. Yeah. See if just it works like Memento.
Yeah. It's because boy, that show is just garbage on toast. That's it. I think we're done. Unless there's other things you want to say out loud.
No.
All right.
nothing I can think of. If any of you have watched any other late era Seagal movies that you want to recommend, or any other crappy movie that you would like to hear Alex and I talk about, let us know.
Yeah, do that. And we'll reveal why we're asking that. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Can they hear this? Can they hear the
wink? They can. Wink? They're hearing that's.
I do have giant eyelids.
Wow, dude, your eyelids sound really that gross. Was it. Yeah, your eyelids sound like a middle-aged fat guy.
I have a medical condition, please.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not PC. I'm allowed to make fun of people with medical conditions. All right, so anyway, so things like that, find me online, blah. I don't care, I'm not saying it. All
read
right.
A book.
Yes.
It's the book of lists.
Yeah, it looks
good. And when you get done with it, it's revealed that there's a second book of lists.
Yeah, it's two books.
It's the exact same.
It's in my country.